Luister lokaal. Luister dorpsradio.nl.
Altijd dichtbij.
Laren uit, de wildernis in. Wekelijks neemt safari-expert en geboren laarder Frank Ranzijn je mee in zijn wereld. De wereld van ongerepte safari-gebieden, de Big Five en de cirkel van het leven. Eten of gegeten worden. Een wereld vol safari-geheimen die hij met jou als luisteraar ontrafelt. Van de mooiste plekken om op safari te gaan tot de regels van de bush. Samen met prominente gasten uit de natuur- en conservationwereld neemt Frank je mee, Laren uit, de wildernis in.
Degene die weer live meeluisteren vandaag hier bij Dorpsradio Laren vanuit het altijd zonnige Laren Noord-Holland. Vandaag weer een nieuwe aflevering van ons infotainmentprogramma Safari Geheimen. Safari Geheimen, de radio- en podcastshow die je meeneemt op mooie reizen naar de ruige natuur van Afrika. En hoe deze reizen het beste plannen en alles wat je hier verder over zou moeten willen weten of ook gewoon wil weten. We gaan vandaag naar een relatief onbekend gebied in het noorden van Namibië. Van oudsher noemden we dat de Caprivi-regio. Tegenwoordig de Zambezi Valley genaamd. Mijn naam Frank Ranzijn, oprichter van de travel design studio Safari Secrets. De safari-specialist op het gebied van 100% maatwerk reizen naar landen zoals Zuid-Afrika, Namibië, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Tanzania, etc. etc. Vandaag, dus zoals gezegd, we gaan naar Namibië. Niet voor de eerste keer, maar ditmaal naar een regio die niet zo vaak aan bod komt. En veel mensen kennen het misschien dus nog als de Caprivi-strip in Noord-Namibië. De smalle strook die loopt ten noordoosten van Etosha National Park en eindigt nabij de Victoria-waterval op de grens van Zimbabwe en Zambia. Deze strook kent een aantal prachtige nationale parken die maar door weinig worden bezocht. En dat gaan we vandaag veranderen. Daar gaan we veranderingen aanbrengen. Ik zeg, laten we dan ook de lanen weer uittrekken en de wildernis weer in. Laat de boel dus nog even de boel. Luister naar mijn nieuwe interview met de powervrouw Tinola Rodgers. Tinola bouwde samen met Wijlen haar man Dusty African Monarch Lodges. Een droom in de Babwata National Park van Namibië. Helaas is haar man inmiddels niet meer onder ons. En pas kort geleden, vorig jaar, overleden aan een vervelende ziekte. Wil je tijdens ons gesprek meekijken waar we over praten? Dan kun je natuurlijk hun sfeervolle kleinschalige portfolio die ze samen hebben opgebouwd, zou je kunnen volgen terwijl wij dit gesprek voeren op africanmonarchlodges.com. Okay, let's switch into English now. See if my guest of honor of today, Tinola Rodgers, co-owner and founder of African Monarch Lodges, is there at the other side of the globe. Hello, Tinola, are you there?
I'm here, Frank. Thank you very much for having me on your show today.
There you are. Thank you for taking the time again. again, we have to say a warm welcome in our radio podcast show today, because we had a first attempt in November last year, and we had such a bad connection that we had to decide to abort the interview and making a new plan for a new date, which is today. So very, very thankful that you took the time again to talk to us today. And maybe it's good to start the whole conversation. Now, first of all, what are we going to do? We are going to try to inspire our listeners to come and stay at your part of the world, which is not too well known yet, but that's what we're going to change today. Tinola, my first question is always, would you tell us a little bit about your background? Where are you born and raised? How did you end up in Africa and in safari tourism, for instance? And just tell us what you want to tell us.
Well, I was born in a small town called Gobabis, right here in Namibia. And I then moved to South Africa to the outskirts of the Sabi Sands National Park, where my father built a few of the lodges out there. And then came back, finished my high school in Namibia.
Yeah.
And moved back to South Africa to go into hotel management. So I've always wanted to be in the service industry. I think it was a program I watched on TV. Was fascinated about guest service and guest care.
Yeah.
I think the program I watched was, the lady was the guest relations officer, and that's what I wanted as a young girl, wanted to be. So I did my hotel management diploma in South Africa. I did an in-service course with the Karas Hotel Groups. And once I qualified and got my diploma, I moved into smaller lodges. I did not want to be in big hotels where mm-hmm. guests are just a number. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be in small luxuries, more intimate, where it's all about the guest experience. And went and worked for a small lodge in Zambia. And then somehow, Zambia, I was back in the Sabi Sands, where I worked for Eliwana Africa, not Eliwana Africa in the Sabi Sands. It was for Ulu Saba, Richard Branson's lodge.
Of course.
And then after that, found myself with Dusty Rogers, my late husband. Obviously mm-hmm. not then. I was married with my two children and then worked for Islands in Africa as the general manager of the entire group. Then after that, I moved up into East Africa, where I worked for Eliwana Africa in Tanzania, Kenya, and Zanzibar. And when my children were, at an age where they needed to be part of sports and, getting, because they were bush schooled all along, with tutors and small schools that were in their neighboring areas. And because we were just always in remote areas. So I grew up in remote areas. I grew up on small lodges and so did my kids. And then I needed to get back either to South Africa or Namibia. And I phoned Dusty Rogers and I said, could you give me a reference? I need to move back from East Africa. And he said, no, I want you to come and work for me. And that's how I came back to Namibia. And he had this restaurant in Windhoek and he started suites and he'd given up islands in Africa.
Yeah.
And I worked there for a year, just helped him set it up. And I started my own hospitality management training business where I drove around Namibia to lodges, to hotels, and did in-service training to the companies, to the hotels. Mm-hmm. And when Dusty built or won the tender for Nambwa and Kazile, he phoned me up 2014 December and he said, right, do you still have your training company? I've just won this tender and I need staff trained from the local community and I know you're the best person for this. So I said, yes, I do. And that is how I got involved with Dusty Rogers again. But this time I was divorced and I had my two children with me as a single mom and my their father had moved back to South Africa. And that is how I then got. And then later on, through an encounter with a buffalo on Kazile Island, shortly after we started, the buffalo charging myself, Dusty, our guide, and a group of people that we had that we were just showing them what we were going to do at Kazile, started charging us. And then we all dove and ran into bushes. And I promise you that story about don't run. It's very difficult when you're in that situation and have mm-hmm. this bigger boy running after you. And I remember my late husband had this orange cap on, and this buffalo took one look at him and went for him.
Yeah.
And I remember standing in the bush and seeing this. I mean, it was just dust. It was one of the scariest moments, and seeing this buffalo behind him. And as he put his head down, I just knew this was the end. And it was such a frightening experience. And you just see dust, and I didn't quite know what was going on. And the next minute, when the dust settled, Dusty stood up. He'd obviously, what he said was he saw the head of the buffalo go down and knew this was it, and then dove to the right. And that saved his life at the last minute, you know, just in time.
Oy.
And when he got up, the first thing he shouted was, "Tinola!" And that was it. I just knew I couldn't live with this without this man. I knew I had to give up my business and join him. And it's something he always wanted, but he was so respectful of my dream and what I wanted to do in my career. And then, yes, we fell in love, and in 2019, we got married. And sadly, 6 months after that, he was diagnosed with two cancers. And for 3 years, we fought cancer, dealt with COVID, and I am where I am today. And yeah.
And that's why I call you. And that's why I call you a power woman. Because it's such a sad story in a way. It's a beautiful love story, and the way where you're coming from and how this all developed, what you're just telling us, which is a great story. But then it's such a sad ending of your marriage and your life together, which you probably loved to the moon and back, I can imagine. It's a shame that he is not there anymore. I did read a lot about him as a preparation. And they called him, what was it, Captain Caprivi, for instance. And I know a little bit of what he have done in the past and what you just told us. So, yeah, a very respected man, I think, from what I've read about him.
He was indeed, you know, he was respected in the tourism circles. He was a very sociable, kind-hearted man. You know, he laughed hard, and he just had this. There was just something about him. He'd walk into a room, and you could feel his presence a mile away. In the community, he was well respected. So, you know, it was one of the things that I thought I would struggle with the most was stepping into those shoes, stepping into that community area, and gaining and being respected or being allowed to be present in that area and continue, you know, with this legacy of ours, you know, that he started and I'm now continuing with. And the support from this community, the respect, and all because of his 30 years with this community and being in that area and what he did, you know, and I am now even more convinced and committed to staying. That is my home. Those are my people. And what I've been doing since he left, and even during COVID, you know, when a lot of lodges during COVID, we all struggled. Everyone struggled.
Yeah.
And a lot of lodges had no choice but to retrench and to close doors for a few years. We couldn't, you know, because we were in this rural community where tourism, the few lodges that are in that area, were so reliant on the income from those few people that were employed.
Yeah.
You know, one person employed at our lodge, for example, feeds 12 people back home, and that's statistically proven. So we couldn't retrench. And so we started the Sidhwa project, and we started with just employing 4 people. And during COVID, we employed another 4 and another 4. And so it happened as we opened workshop after workshop after workshop. And the Sidhwa project now employs 30 people from that community. And I could have quite easily just thrown in the towel after my husband left, and because it was really difficult, but I hung in there for these people. I hung in there for the dreams that they had and the hope that we had given them. And I hung in because of the love that I have for this area. And I believe that this is my purpose to make sure that these lodges exist and exist for many, many more years because of what Number One Kazile actually offered to our guests. what that area offers our guests. You know, it's such a beautiful remote park that is still so unknown.
We are going to talk about that. We are going to talk about that.
Okay.
Don't worry, because I wanted to ask you, and don't worry about all the questions we had written down, and we will maybe go a total different direction. That doesn't matter, because I think this is quite important what you're just telling us. May I ask you, after your husband died, and what you were telling, he was such a charismatic guy who was so much respected in the community. When he was not there anymore and you had to take over all by yourself, how did the communities treat you? Did they welcome you with the same kind of respect?
Absolutely. Well, the morning after my husband passed away, one of the first phone calls I made was to Honorable Chief Mayuni, whom Dusty had a 30-year relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him what had happened. And the first thing he said to me was, "Tanola, please bring my son home." Those were his words.
Ah.
And we had a memorial for him here in Windhoek, mm-hmm. but I went and took his ashes to that area, to the land where he felt he belonged.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
He organized the guest list, and he felt that all the people that Dusty had worked with over the years should be present.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a gathering of about 70 people. I chose 2 days where there were no guests. Mm-hmm. And so that all our staff could be present at the memorial service. It's an area right opposite the house that Dusty built for him and I,
mm-hmm.
at Kazita Island Lodge. And during that ceremony, the chief made a pledge in front of his entire community. And remember, the chiefs aren't allowed to attend funerals, and they don't, because they're not allowed to be in these public spaces.
Ah, okay.
Their protocol.
I didn't know that.
And the chief said there was no ways he was going to not be present for Dusty's funeral, for the burial. And he was there, and he made a pledge to myself and to his entire community that he would, and he wants his community to receive me with open arms, to work with me, to support me, because I continue carrying Dusty in my heart and in with me. And that if I have walked with him for so many years, then I can certainly be trusted. And he wished me luck, and he gave me their support. And that was when I knew that I was going to be okay.
Yeah. Wonderful to hear.
I have meetings with, you know, women alone in these meetings with tribal authorities, with the community leaders.
Mm-hmm.
It's a daunting experience.
Yeah.
And yet I've managed to do it because they support me, because I think, and it's also, you know, you've got to also show it. And I think that's why I worked so hard in establishing and making sure that every single project that Dusty and I had promised, mm-hmm. in that time I was still alive,
mm-hmm.
That I fulfill these promises. So last year I worked really hard to get all these workshops opened. And in November 2018, I stood in front of that community with Dusty present, and the chief was present when we asked for this piece of land that the Sidra project's built on. And we made several promises of different projects, workshops that we would build. And a week ago, literally a week ago, we launched it. That last week, Thursday, I think we launched that. We finally set up and established the last of the workshops, which was the aluminium workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my final promise that I had made to that community, that Dusty and I had promised. And that was what is important. When you make a promise to these people, you need to stick to it. And that is what Dusty had taught me. There's a lot that he made sure I understood before he left, and in the time that we worked together, because when he started getting sick, you know, his energy levels weren't, and then I basically took over, and he was just this guiding light throughout. And I still feel today that he guides me. There's still times when I know, this is his hand at work. So,
well,
yeah.
Wonderful that you share this whole story with us, Tinalla. I think that's important sometimes too, to not only, I always say, let's not only talk about fluffy beds and stuff. Let's talk about important things in life. And I think this is way much more important. And it's great that this story has been told by you yourself. And yes, I do want to talk about those two beautiful places you are running, African Monarch Lodges. I think I'm correct. Eh? You only start building those two places in 2013, 2014, right?
2015, Namwa opened. So Dusty
15.
Started.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Yeah, started building in 2014.
But what I want to say, it means that you are relatively a very young company. So that's where I'm going to is maybe it's, first of all, very good to tell the listeners a little bit where you are, because I think that a lot of people have no clue about the Babwata National Park, maybe even not know so much about the Zambezi Valley. So can you try and explain a little bit to the people who listen and to me where you actually are in Namibia?
So what was called the Caprivi Strip many years ago now became the Zambezi region. And if you look at Namibia, it has this little arm that extends out to the right that sits right in the middle of Angola, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana.
It's what we call northeast Namibia, I call it. Is that right? If I'm telling it like it like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
So now where that little arm goes sort of does a little indentation down. You have the long strip, you have the Babwata National Park. Mm-hmm. So our closest big town is Katima, Mulilo.
Yeah.
And you've got Pacha Airport in Katima, just on the outskirts of Katima.
Yeah.
So then 100 kilometers west of Katima, you have the Babwata National Park. Now, currently, and up until since we started, we've been the only two lodges, Namwa Tented Lodge and Kazila Island Lodge, are the only two lodges within this Babwata National Park. So we're looking at a stretch of 200 kilometers in length and then 40 kilometers from top to between Angola and Botswana. So it's a huge
wildlife and nature and wildlife area. It's very difficult to understand, I think, how big it is.
Exactly. And you've got sand dunes in there. You have, I mean, lush green trees, indigenous trees. And rivers. You have the Kwando River that flows from Angola down into the Lunyanti, and similar landscapes that you would find in the Okavango Delta.
Yeah, exactly.
Same fauna and flora that you would find in the Okavango Delta. You know, and if you look at the whole Khaza region, so we sit, if you look at the Khaza map as it stands today, which is the world's largest conservation area for wildlife.
Exactly.
And you have the largest migratory or elephants that migrate this area. So we sit right there. And, you know, when you look at the Babwata National Park, you would think, or one would think that this is a well-known, considering you have all of the big five except rhino because of there not being any fences.
Mm-hmm.
But you have wild dog, we have cheetah, and when you see animals in the Babwata National Park, you always see them in great numbers. So you wouldn't just see two kudus; you'd always see a herd of kudus, and roan, sable. I mean, we get these coming through the lodge or to the lodge in the front. We have sitatunga that used to be classed as very elusive and very rare.
You
see sitatunga almost every time you go on a boat cruise these days.
Maybe good to say that sitatunga, semi-aquatic antelope, because not everybody knows that animal because you never see them. Actually, even not in even when you're in the Okavango Delta, you don't see them. You need luck. And like you are living there, you will see it. And then what you say in your region even more. But very special to see sitatunga, I know. Actually, what you're telling me, Tinola, is what I found out a couple of months ago by clients who were staying at your place. It's much more game rich than people think it is, I have the feeling. Yes. So yes, your area is very understated and we have to change that. At least,
exactly.
At least we have to try to bring you some more people. Let's not make it over tourism, but that's not going to happen. But it's understated, eh? Let's be honest. And from what I heard from my clients who were so overwhelmed by the amount of wildlife they've seen, they were staying about 5 nights at your place in Nambwa and in Kazile. So it's very good to convince people who want to go to Namibia that Namibia is a little bit more than Sossusvlei and Etosha, et cetera, Damaraland. And they should try and see if they explore your area a little bit and stay some days at your area, in your area, I think.
Exactly. You know, and you've got the, everywhere else, what we have on offer is the fact that you can go on boat cruises. So mm-hmm. here you up close and personal with the hippos, crocodiles, and we've got big crocodiles now, like you would find in the Zambezi region. The bird life along these rivers are just beautiful, and what makes this park so special is the fact that you can go on a boat cruise and not see another boat. You can go on a game drive and not see another vehicle. You can sit at a lion sighting or a very interesting sighting, whatever it may be, and you would be the only vehicle there for hours. And that is what makes us so special.
Can I fly over tomorrow and be there the next day?
Of course.
Oh my God! I wish I was there. I will. It's good to hear this because, again, a lot of people. Now I call it sometimes just the Okavango Delta on the Namibia side. Because I think there is a lot of similarity with the Okavango Delta in the Botswana side, only it's less people and less tourism. And it will change in the future, but I can imagine that you think it should go a little faster than this because it's still very unknown. Now, that's why I wanted to talk to you and talk about this also. What those people also told me who were at your place is that they saw a lot of wild dog. Is your area... Is that the whole year or is it certain period? Because I know they have huge home ranges. But are you lucky with your wild dog population or is it very incidentally?
It's, you know, there's times where we'll see them for weeks on end on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And then it'll go quiet and then you see them again. So it's not like in any park. Because we don't have fences, I can't say to you, no, Frank, we get them every single day or every week or we see them on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But there are times when, like them, and guess that every single time they go out, they see them. And when our guards go out, they see them.
Yeah.
And then you'll have a lull where you don't see them for months and then they come back again.
Yeah. It's depending on the denning sites also, of course.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we're now starting to do a lot more research as well because we want to start understanding this area that we're in and mm-hmm. and sending out our guides and just seeing if we can find these dens and just keeping track of them without putting trackers on them. And that's not in my interest at all, but just to know what is happening.
Yeah. Is any of the dogs collared in your area or not?
No, not the ones that we've seen. No. But we're starting to recognize them and we're starting to see that the numbers are increasing in the packs.
So they
are healthy pack that just keeps going.
Just what you're saying about sometimes you don't see them for months and then they are there every day. Is there in your feeling particular periods in the year that they are more there than other periods of the year or is there nothing to say about that?
Well, we're definitely seeing a trend that they are around a lot more during the rain, what everyone calls the rainy season.
Even like now.
Yeah, like now.
Yeah.
Because it's when the antelope starts dropping their babies and you've got a lot more youngsters running around.
Yeah.
A lot more activity with cats as well.
Yeah, people always think that they will see those key
key animals in the dry season. But that's not always true, eh? Because at the moment I have clients in Wengi in Zimbabwe, and they just sent me some nice film shots and pics from also wild dog, also in the rainy season, and they have a hell of a week with game. So just people should try and travel a little bit more in the green season, and you probably agree to that.
It's the most beautiful time of the year because everything is green. You have, you know, when you look at these impalas and it's just legs and ears. They're the cutest things. And you have a lot of elephant babies around, and there's flowers all over the park, and the birds are in full color. It's just a whole different ball game during the rainy season. And then the rains aren't even, you know, it might rain like now. We've been having rains at night. So during the day, it's perfect for you to go out.
Yeah.
Temperatures are a lot, you know, a lot more, what do you say? You know, when it's dry season, you're dealing with temperatures between 38 and 42 sometimes.
Yeah.
Now you have more moderate temperatures. That's really nice to go for walks and everything. So, and that's another thing we offer is game walks, bush walks.
Great. If it's okay by you, we are going to do a little bit of music to split our conversation in half, and then we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes, okay?
No problem. Thank you.
Yakuruza Nimuri Nakotola Yama Kasma Achorosa Ay Mletegi Solo Bola Ufuni Afla Yakuruza Eh Nimuri Nakotola Yama Kasma Achora Mletegi Solo Bola Yakuruza, eh, dimuri, yakoto, dimuri, ay lale, makasma, no ya,
Okay, Tinola, there we are again. What a nice beat under this piece of music. I like it.
Lovely, yes.
Abo Mvelo from Botswana. Tinola, let's talk a little bit about, you did tell us a lot already, but is there something what makes African Monarch or Nambra and Kazile different from other parks or experiences from a safari point of view? Did you tell us already?
No, I don't know. Frank, I think what I believe sets us apart is the fact that, not necessarily sets us apart, but what I believe is, or shall I just say that what's at the core and at the heart of African Monarch Lodges is our reach into the community, mm-hmm, as well as conservation. So we are part of a joint venture partnership. So We border community areas mm-hmm. that are outside the park, and all our staff come from these areas. So both each of the lodges have its own joint venture partnership with a different conservancy, so a different community yeah. of people. So we call them a body of community. There's then the conservancies. Mm-hmm. And 12% of what you're, so if you book a guest into Numbwa, for example, mm-hmm. moment you make that payment, 12% of that invoice goes to the Mayuni Conservancy from Numbwa. Okay. And if you have guests staying at Kazile, 12% of what you pay at Kazile would then go to the Mashi Conservancy.
Okay.
So that is the first thing. Mm-hmm. It's a direct impact. We also only employ from these areas, and except obviously the management. And then the fact that, you know, we train our staff ourselves. And it's also owner-run. So I'm there all the time. When my husband was alive, we were there every single 2 weeks, yeah. for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so we are hands-on. We have managers, of course. Mm-hmm. But we manage. We so, it's my heart and soul. Mm-hmm. It was Dusty's as well. Mm-hmm. And our staff are our family. And when you walk into these lodges, you feel that. You feel that these people are cared for. And not just them, that the extended families are cared for. And that is what we instill in our staff and in the communities that we work with, is that we care. And I think our guests feel that because it's a story that we tell. It is our story. It's the very fabric of what we are there for. And we then set up these two projects, and all our experiences go around that personal interaction. You know, we don't have these elaborate guides that you would find at other lodges. We have guides that tell their stories, that understand the medicinal uses of a plant that they used when they were little children, that their grandparents have used. And this is the kind of story that they tell, I guess, when they go on a bushwalk or on a game drive, is those kind of stories. So it just goes a little bit deeper. And there's just the fact that we're right next to the river, there's just a profound energy that you feel. It's very relaxed. It's very calming. The food that we offer comes, most of it, you know, the fresh produce comes from the Sijwa project. We try and make sure that everything is about the experience. We do a lot of setups. So we'll take your guests out into, you know, next to Horseshoe Bend, which is this beautiful area where all the animals would congregate in the afternoons to drink mm-hmm. from. And we'll do these big setups. And we put great pride and time and effort into creating those, what they call goosebump moments, wow moments, that just where the guests go, oh, this is for me? You did this for us? You know, and that is, it's about satisfaction, you know, and our staff smile, and they smile because they've made their guests happy. And this comes from the top all the way down to the bottom and all around. And then the establishment of the Sijwa project is where we now look after the conservation side of these areas that we've been made custodians of. So instead of recycling, may I carry on into this? Or
yes, of course you can. Yeah, no, I want to talk to, because I just wanted to ask, am I right that being a guest in either Numbwa or Kazile means it's not Safari only, it's that project. And I'm not sure if I am pronouncing it right. Do you say Sijwa project? Because I was in my head calling it Sijwa, but it's Sijwa?
It's Sijwa, the Sijwa project.
Okay. But I think you are also guest from the Sijwa project. Am I right?
Yes. So our guests, so we offer game drives, boat cruises, game walks, and then a visit to the Sijwa project, which is an experience. So yep. Everything is this experience. So you would arrive at the Sijwa project, and we set it up to basically get rid of all our waste, because there is no dump site in this area. There's no waste management that exists in this part of the world.
Nobody thinks about that, but yeah.
So we created, the chief gave us this piece of land, which is right between our two lodges, but on the community side, because we would never be able to do this in the park, because you're not allowed to grow, you know, plants and herbs.
Yeah.
So we have this piece of land, and every single, whether it's paper, plastic, glass, tin cans, organic matter that goes into the worm farms, paper that goes into the worm farms, it goes into the permaculture plants, the greenhouses for the herbs, and we have some orchards going now as well. The glass bottles goes there, it gets crushed, and we make the most beautiful, it's a pity I can't show you pictures, but the most beautiful glass beads and jewelry, ornaments, decorations. Then the plastic bottles we build with, the tin cans. We have just recently, we had Swiss guests that I met last year walking around Numwood's deck during dinner and hosting guests, and they wanted to be involved. And so they came out for 3 weeks. They stayed with us as guests, and they helped us set up this aluminium project. Trained, we employed four more people. So with every workshop, we employ more people. We train them on these new skills. And we make sure that we employ people that have never, ever worked before. I mean, and there's hundreds, thousands of them in this community, sadly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've now recently, taken tin cans, and we made this paper serviette holder and this butter pot. Now, the paper serviette holder with this big hippo that sits on top of it with the extended with glass beads, it was 160 tin cans that was melted down to make just this one item. So you can imagine how we are starting to clean up the waste that would have gone into a landfill by just recycling all of this. And then guests would arrive and they would walk from one workshop to the next. I mean, we're taking all our cardboard boxes that our supplies arrive in. Mm-hmm. That gets torn up. We put it in baths. So I renovated Numbwa in August last year. So we had 10 baths, and these are now sitting in the middle of the project, filled with water. And we put all our cardboard boxes in there to just become soft.
Yeah.
And then we built this contraption, and it gets put in there, and we make this rectangular shape. It looks like a brick, a normal stone brick, but it's made from cardboard.
Yeah, yeah.
Press it, and it sits. I mean, it's a long process. It sits and it dries in the sun, and we put chili flakes that we grow at the project into this, and with a bit of charcoal that comes from the glass recycling oven. Mm-hmm. And this we then give to the communities, and we use it in our campsite to for the donkey board, so you can have hot water in the campsite. And when you light this, it gives a tiny little smoke, and this smoke with the chili basically irritates the elephant's trunks, because when the community grows their crops, the elephants raid these. I mean, in one night, a herd of elephants can take out an entire village's crop of maize or mahangu. And it's devastating for them because that's worth of food. So we came up with this to try and help. And then obviously we have a bee project as well.
Yeah.
Where we are extracting, we've made 97 bee boxes. So we built a carpentry workshop. We have four people that work there that we trained, and they have made 97. Now we're waiting for the bees to arrive, and then we're going to populate these beehives all over the project. The bees go in there, and then eventually we're going to send it out to the villages. So we're just doing the test run now this year at Sidwa. And once we have the hives, then we extract the honey and we bottle and we sell it. And, you know, you can make candles from the bees' wax. There's lots you can do with this honey. And obviously, we're also going to send bee boxes into the communities, and then we will buy the honey back from those communities so that they can generate money from the bees that come into the boxes that we donate to them. So what I didn't mention was that 12% of everything that we sell at the Sidwa project, including the entrance fees that everyone pays to arrive or to go there, goes to the community conservancy as well. Mm-hmm. So again, the community benefits from the project. We also have a sewing workshop that we established, and we now employ 10 ladies from the community, and we have fashion designers that have come from Namibia and South Africa that have trained. They come for 2 weeks, they train the girls new items, and I mean, four of our garments have made it to South African Fashion Week in 2022. Wow. It was one of the last things Dusty was able to be present in and witness.
How wonderful is that? Yeah.
And bathrobes, the most beautiful. It's designer, you know, it's got a designer label on it. It has our Sidwa project label on it. And it's made by our ladies there. And we keep bringing in, you know, I keep sourcing and looking for fashion designers who want to be involved in this project and educate and teach new skills. Then the most exciting, or one of the, I mean, they're all exciting for me. And I keep dreaming up new projects. And I'm now at a stage where everyone's saying I must just slow down. But what we now also launched on the 25th of March mm-hmm. was the start of a vocational residency.
Yeah.
So the vocational residency.
You tell me about it, because I have no clue. You were just telling me before we were going on air. What is that all about? Tell us.
So we interviewed 40 young adults that have just matriculated. Now they range from 18 years to 28.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 14 of these young adults that don't have a future. You know, there's no prospects for them. There's no, I mean, I'll be bold enough to say that there was no hope for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we interviewed them and then selected 15 actually, but one dropped out because he has too many children and has to feed them. So we're down to 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 3-year program. So we selected 14 girls and boys,
mm-hmm.
and they're part of this program now. So we're educating them on 17 different vocations. And we started with a computer course, and we have trainers that have now come from South Africa, from ER.
We're out. Do you want me to see Kian?
Yet. But anyway, these kids are, or they're actually adults, are working on computers now. They've designed an app where this entire program sits on. So it's computer courses. Our next course is going to be a beekeeping course. Then the next one is the field grad training, the theory part. And next year, April, they're doing the practical part. And then they will be a qualified field guard, certified field guard by the end of April next year. But they're going to do a journalism course. They're going to do a tourism course. And in fact, Hella Gorbel, we'll be heading up the tourism course, and then we have, sure, what else? We've got hospitality management, so food and beverage training, housekeeping training. We are also doing art classes. We're doing sculpting. We're doing photography. We're doing videography. What is there? Oh, there's so many.
It's a lot. What is the vocational residency?
Vocational residency is we've created the studio. They come to class. We bring in trainers from all over the world. I mean, the journalist is going to come from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get probably a few journalists to be part of this program. So they come into the studio and they educate the children. And then on this specific field. So instead of just doing a business course, basic business acumen will be one of the courses as well, mm-hmm. to create entrepreneurs out of one of them. Two,
okay. Yeah.
They have this smorgasbord of this buffet of different career choices that they're going to be trained in. So by the time, you know, at the end of the 3 years, they can step into any of those fields that they are most comfortable with and that they resonate with most. And obviously in these 3 years, there's such a tight program that we're running where we monitor everything. There's reports through the app that we're developing. And we're going to make sure that they are well-versed in every single one of those fields. Healthcare is another. So at the start of when we interviewed them, after we'd selected them, we asked them, what do you want to be? And you know, they were basic, I want to be a housekeeper. I want to be a guide. I want to be a, the healthcare provider.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 weeks of within the, you know, I was there for the first 3 weeks of this course, of the first course.
Yeah.
And then kids every day and seeing them progress. You know, just by watching them after day 3, how they walk out of that class with confidence, how they walk out with their whole personality start changing. There's so much hope in their eyes. There's excitement. And to be able to be part of that, to be able to know that after 3 years, you've given 14 young adults an opportunity to make something of themselves. You know, an ERP, Elephant, Rhino and People, is one of our biggest collaborative partners with the school. Walked in Tinus Hansen, and he walked in and he said, right, our company is putting together a fleet of planes in Namibia for conservation. And we would like to take youngsters from communities and train them to be pilots. So at the end of your 3 years here, if you so wish, then we can take you in to train you as pilots, and they pay for that as well. So already a door's open, and two of them already put their hands up and says, I want to be that. I mean, we've got guys who after 2 weeks of just doing the computer course now wants to be a cyber security technician. I mean, the dreams are becoming bigger as they sit there day after day. And we want to be able to, you know, I'm collaborating a lot with people. I do a lot of networking to get more and more help and more companies and corporate companies to become involved in this on a global level. To take these kids, I mean, the one guy, youngster, who put his hand up and said, I want to be a pilot. But in the beginning, he wanted to be a healthcare worker. So I said, right, do you realize that with that pilot's license, you can take a plane and fly all over Namibia and go to those rural, remote areas, you know, these big little Cessnas, and go and provide healthcare for people in such remote locations. And his eyes just lit up. You know, there's hope. And so we're definitely going to certify this course, this three-year program. And I'm trying to tap into, I haven't written the program out to the finest detail yet, because it evolves all the time. As I network, as I meet people, as I engage, as I connect, more people are just drawn to this and want to be a part of it and wants to open doors for these youngsters. So I'm allowing this to just flow, to evolve naturally, and to see where it takes us, because it is just so exciting. I'm very excited.
You are so passionate about this. It's so great to listen to you. I didn't have to say anything, but you also hear some music. First of all, thank you for this whole story about the Citra project. You can feel the love for the project, and I hope guests will feel the love also for what you guys are doing there. And I think they will. It's so genuine. We didn't touch another important thing of African Monarch. It's the retreats you do. We have about two and a half minutes maximum left. Can you round it off with a little bit of telling us something about the retreats?
Okay, well, if I've got 2 minutes, I'm going to tell you a powerful story. So we host retreats at Nambwa only. We have 10 rooms, so it's very exclusive. I personally host every retreat that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And the retreat that I'm very, very excited about is, so it's exclusive to Nambwa. No other guests would come in over that period. It generally runs over 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And you come there to transform and to partake in whatever modality is being, being promoted for that period or is being facilitated for that period.
Mm-hmm.
So in Germany, we have Hella Gorbel. And Hella came to Nambwa in October 2021. During one of our retreats.
She told me.
She had just been diagnosed with her second round of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she arrived. She was so broken and so, you know, lost. And and she left that retreat with a game plan in mind. You know, she gave up marketing, tourism marketing. She gave up something she knew and did for, I mean, you know her, Frank, for years. Because she's a legend in tourism.
Yeah, she is.
And she gave it all up. She went into an MBSR course, and she's busy studying it right now. And I phoned up and I said, Hella, you need to come and host a retreat here. And she jumped at it. She says, as soon as I'm qualified, I'm coming out. So Hella no longer has cancer. Her cancer is gone.
Okay.
And is in remission. I think people would cringe if I had to say that. But she told me even just today. And then in November, she's coming to host and facilitate her own retreat. Now, that is full circle, where somebody has come as a guest with a serious diagnosis, has healed and transformed, changed her life completely, and is coming back and facilitating her very own retreat at Nambwa. Oh,
wow. Wonderful.
And so that's in November.
Wonderful story at the end. Tinola, may I thank you so much for telling us everything about what we had just talked about, African Monarch, the Citra Project, the retreat, everything. If people come to me and want to know a nice place in Namibia, a little bit different, don't worry. I will talk about your places. Wonderful to talk to you, and hopefully talk to you soon again outside the radio.
I thank you, Frank, and I thank you to all the listeners, and I look forward to hosting all of you.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening and talk to you soon, Tinola. Thank you. Bye-bye. Oké, dit is het weer voor deze week. De tijd zit erop. De volgende twee weken worden ook heel bijzonder. We gaan namelijk een beetje de historiekant in. Twee mensen die het begin van het moderne safari-toerisme hebben meegemaakt. In de tijd dat alles nog erg wild, ruig, bijzonder was. Je kunt het zo gek niet bedenken. Twee heren die toevallig achter elkaar gepland zijn. Dus ik denk dat we dolle verhalen gaan horen over het safari-toerisme. Zo ergens in de late 80e jaren, begin 90. Een groot deel daarvan heb ik zelf ook mogen meemaken. Ben heel bijzonder dat we die de komende twee weken hebben. Ik zeg fijne avond, tot volgende week.